Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Our mission is to make analytics practical. This is not about abstract theory, but to share true stories of how using analytics helps real-life businesses with real-life constraints make the best possible decisions to compete, grow, and thrive. I'm your host, A.G. Tan. My guest today is Chris Wilson, a solution architect and director of services delivery here at Qubit. Now, Chris has many talents, and one of them is taking some complex, messy-looking business problem and stripping away all the loose threads so that we are left with the essence of what needs to be focused on. And this is the talent that I'm looking forward to tapping into today with respect to allocations in the insurance industry. Welcome, Chris. Thank you for being here.
Hi, AG. Thanks for having me.
So, Chris, you have worked with many of Qubit's insurance customers, and this conversation is based on your experiences helping them improve their management reporting processes. Now, management reporting is ultimately about answering questions that lead to better decision making. So, what kinds of questions are insurance companies looking to get answers to that might involve doing allocations?
Sure. I think the biggest things with allocations that they help with is profitability and efficiency of a certain part of a business. So in terms of questions that companies might be looking for answers to, I think a natural one is this new product making the business money? So one of the industry trends in the last 5 to 10 years in insurance is this kind of subsector called niche insurance products. So these are things like cybersecurity insurance, mobile insurance, things that weren't really around 10, 20 years ago. And so these insurance companies are throwing lots and lots and lots of these new products and seeing which ones are the most profitable and which ones are the most efficient for them. So essentially, by doing an allocation process, it's a component that will help them figure out which of these new products is most profitable and which of these products they should invest more of their resources in. So I think that first question is a natural one for businesses to ask. And then a second one that I see frequently with my insurance clients are, who are my most valuable clients? Who are my most valuable customers, right? So insurance industry operates in both business to consumer and business to business. So if you or I, AG, were to buy an auto insurance policy, that's business to consumer. And frankly, the insurance companies probably don't care too much about those kinds of customers because our little insurance policy isn't moving the needle for them. But in the business to business segment, they actually have really large customers in, with policies of tens of millions of dollars, right? And so doing kind of a profitability analysis on their biggest customers with, again, the help of an allocation gives them an indication of where they should be investing their resources, where they should be spending more of their attention on which customers. And again, an allocation is integral to that process.
So let me ask what might be a slightly dumb question, maybe to prove a point. So why can't I just pick the customers that I sold the most to and sort of assume that they're my most profitable? I mean, they're my biggest customers, right?
Sure. So I think let's take an example. Let's say I'm an insurance company and I have insurance contracts to say UPS and FedEx, right? Two big delivery companies. And let's also say that for a simple example, they both bring in $1 million in premiums every year. So on the surface, it looks like they're about equal, right? They bring in the same amount of money. And let's say that the kind of direct cost associated with those customers is about the same as well. So again, without an allocation, you would say that these two customers are equal. However, there's overhead costs or kind of indirect costs associated with any business, right? And the purpose of an allocation is to essentially charge back or spread those overhead costs back to the business units where they're being incurred. So again, back to this hypothetical example, let's say UPS, for example, every time we negotiate a contract with them, legal has to get involved and they take hours and hours and hours of expensive consultants and expensive lawyers, right, to get this contract done. So if we didn't do the allocation, then that cost would never come back to the UPS customer, right? It would just sit in overhead. And I would think that UPS and FedEx are equal. But after the allocation, I can see that, okay, there's a huge legal allocation or chargeback coming to UPS because every time we do that contract, it costs a lot of money. And so that allocation is performed. And then post-allocation, after the allocation, I can say, okay, even though they bring in about the same amount of money, even though they have about the same amount of direct costs, FedEx is actually a more valuable customer because there's less cost associated with this legal example.
No, that's a great example. Thank you very much. And I think any business can relate to that, even at Qubit, when I think about our customers. And of course, we love all our customers, but there's definitely some of them where we have to spend a lot more time on things that don't result in revenue. And I guess those are the things that we would be allocating to the customer in order to understand how profitable they are. No, great. Thank you very much. So that was really a great example with the delivery companies. Can you give me some other specific examples of how allocations have been used in a helpful way?
Sure. Probably easiest to stick with the first question, the examples I brought up there. So I'll kind of stick with that theme. So let's say I'm an insurance company and to kind of follow industry trends, I'm creating a bunch of insurance products to see which ones stick and which ones don't. So let's say I have two new products, product A and product B. And again, for a good comparison, simplistic example, let's say they both bring in about the same amount of revenue, same amount of annual premiums, and it costs about the same to sell them. So the direct costs are the same and the revenue are the same between these two products. Again, pre-allocation, the naive thought might be both are about the same. They're worth the same to the business. So another example of kind of an overhead cost or an allocation cost that's frequent in the insurance industry is call center volume, right? So let's say product A, for whatever reason, gets a ton of calls from customers, whether it be questions on claims or questions on the policy, anything to do with that, that basically everyone calls. Our internal call center has questions and it costs us a lot of labor to answer those phone calls. And product B has some call volume, but not as much as product A. So again, that's an overhead cost, an indirect cost that is kind of unrelated to the products. And then the purpose of the allocation is to charge back or spread those overhead costs back to the products where they're essentially originating from, or the products that they're supporting, right? So after the allocation, we can see that, okay, even though they bring in about the same amount of revenue, they have the same amount of direct costs, we're having to hire 5-10 extra people just to handle the call center volume for product A. So now all of a sudden product A is not as profitable as we once thought. Maybe we don't go forward with product A, or maybe we invest more in product B because it's more profitable, it's more valuable for the business.
Okay, so just to make sure I got this right. So in your example, the call center is basically a shared resource, right? So
yes.
So you have, you know, I'm imagining a room full of people whose job it is to answer the phone. And the way in which you would know, I think, that product A is fielding a lot more calls than product B is because whenever somebody picks up the phone, they're actually making a note of that, right? So we actually have the sort of, I don't know, the number of minutes or seconds of calls that went to product A issues versus product B issue, right? And then that's how you would, I guess, in proportion, allocate the cost of the call center to the different products. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're exactly right, AG. So the tagging of the product, maybe in the call notes or whatever it is, lets us know how much time is spent on each product and how, and that's going to drive the allocation, right? The allocation factor and the percentage that we ultimately charge back to the product. But the employees, in most cases, usually roll into like a call center department or support department. So their wages go to that department that is completely unrelated to the products at that point, right? It's an overhead indirect cost center department. And so at that point, they have nothing to do with the product. They answer the calls, they tag the products that they're supporting, and then the allocation charges the cost back. And then at that point, as you said, you have a kind of a better visual of the profitability of the different products.
Yeah, and it's much more efficient, I guess, you know, in most cases for a call center to be a shared thing, right? Because maybe you don't know ahead of time which products are going to get the most calls. And so if you sort of hired three people to just do product A and they never got any calls, you'd be paying them and there'll be no value to it, right? So that's the advantage of having these shared services. But then the flip side of it is, you know, what needs to pay for those shared services, right? So hence the allocation. So we mentioned tagging. And so let's imagine a scenario, and this is a lead up to my next question, right? So I'm imagining a scenario where, let's say, this insurance company hasn't really thought through that they might need to do allocations at some point. And so maybe their system doesn't actually allow the call center employees to input the product that they're doing the work for. And so instead, you know, the insurance company, the finance people sort of say to the call center manager, say every day, call center manager, I want you to fill out this Excel spreadsheet that sort of tells me approximately how much time your team has been spending on each of the products and submit it to us. And then we'll use that to do the allocation. And, you know, the team manager might say fine, but it's extra work for them because then they have to go and, you know, talk to everybody and kind of get a feeling, and they know it's not going to be 100% accurate. So they might get anxious, you know, sort of, you know, it starts becoming like more expensive, right? But you could still get to your allocations, but there's more of a cost to it. There's more effort. And I just imagine also the finance people, they're going to get these things back every day from all the different call center managers, and then they have to like add them all up, you know, and maybe they're, you know, so then it starts becoming a lot of work, right? So that's my made up example of where, because allocations are essentially a modeling exercise, before you start going down this path, you sort of have to have a cost benefit, you know, analysis, right? As to whether it's worth it, right, to do this. And so, do you have any examples, some other examples, maybe some more real life examples of where the effort of building the allocations model didn't really pay off because it just got overly complicated?
Yeah, I think you brought up a good example there. And I've definitely seen kind of examples of where the cost benefit analysis maybe tips both ways, right? So in terms of where it's maybe not worth it, right? I think up to this point, we have been talking about mostly actuals allocations. And I want to make a distinction here. So actuals cost allocations are for things that actually happened, right? Things that happened in the past and live in the general ledger and kind of things that went to the income statement. And then there's the idea of doing forecast allocations, which is something we do with our clients as well, which is essentially trying to create a similar type allocation process to that you have in your actuals to your forecast, except you're doing it on your forecast or budget data set. So a lot of our clients do that because the whole idea of a forecast or a budget is to try to produce something that looks exactly like actuals, right? Maybe not the same numbers, but at least the same format. And so if we're trying to build the same format, we want to build the same allocations into our forecast or budget. I think one of the things that I've seen is People will take that to the nth degree and try to do a very detailed allocation in the forecast for the budget. And it becomes too much work. As you said, it's not worth, you know, the juice isn't worth the squeeze. And I think that's for a couple of reasons. So a common practice in the FP&A industry is to plan or budget at a slightly higher level than your actuals come in. So for example, you may have in your actuals, 10 general ledger accounts that have to do with travel. From your budget, you might only budget to one travel account for simplicity's sake, right? So naturally, in your forecast or budget allocation process, you should only be allocating to that same level. Seems simple, but I've seen customers try to literally mimic the actual allocation process. You know, you run into issues where you're trying to allocate to all accounts or departments or business units or whatever you're allocating to, and your factors are essentially zero because there's no forecast or budget data. You're dividing by zero. And then you end up with things not getting allocated out, the troubleshooting exercise, and here we are spending too much time on something that is supposed to be a benefit, right? So I think the main lesson there is in the forecast and budget process is at minimum, kind of mimic the allocation process to the level that you're budgeting at, and maybe even go a step higher. So try to find that medium level, not super high, but definitely not super detailed, super low. Try to find that medium level at which you want to allocate, so you can get the most out of the allocation process without chasing down small little numbers that maybe you weren't allocated or don't look right. Can be a slippery slope.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And frankly, I think this is true of any kind of modeling, right? I mean, allocations is building a model. It's never going to be real. You can never completely validate it against reality. Doing a budget is also building a model. But even if it's not going to be accurate, you know, 100% accurate, because it simply cannot be, it's still a really, really important exercise to go through, because otherwise you're completely flying blind as you go into the future, right? You know, it's just like when I'm planning, you know, holiday season's coming up, I'm planning, you know, my Christmas shopping, and I've got an idea that, oh, I'm gonna buy, you know, a jacket for my son, and I have a picture in my head. Now, the actual one that I find may not cost exactly what the picture in my head says, and it may not be exactly the same shape and color, but at least it'll be an approximation. If I didn't have the idea, I wouldn't even have found the thing, right? So stupid example, really, of the importance of planning and how we model all the time. And I guess it's a little bit of the 80-20 rule, right? You know, you can get quite a good way of the way there by doing what you suggested, which is like perhaps going up a level. And it's really not necessarily worth, you don't get the commensurate increase in accuracy by, you know, spending four times as much time on it just to get like one percentage point closer or something like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've already talked about how doing allocations can be a really valuable tool for understanding how different parts of a business or different products are truly performing. And so there's a great benefit, right? And we've also talked about how you have to balance this against effort and complexity. You know, if it's too much effort, it might just not be worth it. If it's too complex, and you can't explain how it works, and this is a whole other thing, no one will trust it. So what advice do you have for balancing the benefits against the effort and the complexity and the explainability? Is it a matter of investing in technology? Like, will technology magically fix it all? Or is there more to it than that?
I'm glad you asked this, AG. I think it's a common question that I get. I think the answer to solving this complex problem or any complex problem is not to throw technology at it, right? I think that the root of the problem has to do with business process. So focusing on the business problem and coming up with a proper business process to address that is foremost. That's priority 1A. And then maybe coming, you know, looking at different technology options which support the business process is maybe the second or third priority. one of the things I think Qubit is really good at is the fact that we're technology agnostic, right? So we work with several different technologies. They're all, one isn't necessarily better than the other. They all have their pros and cons, right? And if you have a good business process around an allocation, all of these technologies will work and they will do what you ask of them. On the flip side, if you have a bad business process, all of these technologies will fail, right? So it's not a matter of technology solving the problem, because with the technology advancements of recent years, technology is very good and there's several options that can generally do what you want. It's the business process and solving the business problem where I see the bottleneck a lot of the time. So I think that's the crux of the issue. And then technology is secondary.
So let me just revisit one of the earlier examples we talked about, the one with the call center and whether or not they're tagging, you know, each call to a product or not. I mean, would that be an example of a business process thing where part of the business process is to make sure that the calls are tagged? Because once you have that, then you can do the allocation much more accurately. Is that an example of what you mean?
That's a great example. So that, you could say, is a good business process, right? You instill a habit in your call center employees to tag it. And that's a really valuable data point down the line when you get to the allocation. You produce the very accurate allocation results and it's easy to manage. But I think that's an example of a good business process. So maybe let's talk about an example of a bad business process, right? Where going back to that example, the call center employees don't tag their products after their call. And you have a manager who isn't actually answering phones, just kind of has a general awareness of what people are talking about. And so he has to send an email once a month to someone of an estimation, right? Half the time he doesn't send that email. There's no accountability. There's no workflow. So no notifications letting the person next in line know that he's completed his step. It's not accurate. Half the time you're chasing this person to get the driver that you're looking for. And when it's not in there, you run the allocation and he didn't send his estimate yet. All of a sudden you're allocating $0 and you're not balancing. So that's kind of the flip side of a bad business process, right? So that's the kind of thing you need to solve first and then bring in the technology to support that.
I do think though, we should be fair to the cost center manager, right? Because we're asking him here potentially to do something that's outside his day job, right? Like he's got a day job of presumably overseeing and managing and supervising and coaching all of these people. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're saying, oh, and you also have to go and fill out this thing, you know, with data that, you know, you don't have. So then you're under pressure to potentially make things up or whatever. But that's also part of it. And then the other thing, the other thought that you triggered when you were talking about business process was, again, this example of tagging the calls with products and so on. You only get there after you have a vision for how you want to answer the business problem, right? Because you start with the business problem and from there you work back, you know, kind of work backwards into the process that you need to support, you know, what you ultimately want to get to, right? So.
Exactly. So in this case, the business problem is, say an executive says, you know, product A and product B on paper look like the exact same product. They have the same amount of profitability, but I'm not sure that they are. So the business problem is getting a better analysis of profitability of your products that you don't currently have. Maybe he has a sense that, you know, I think there's a lot of calls being answered for product A, but I'm not sure. There's no data to back that up, right? So that's the business problem right there is you know, your profitability analysis is subpar and you want to kind of enrich that a little bit. So, okay, put that on paper. That's your mission statement, your business problem that you want to solve. And then as you said, okay, let's come up with a business process to support the allocation. How are we going to, let's look at the call center. How are we going to figure out how many calls are going to product A? Okay, well, we have a time entry system where there's a field that was not currently used, have the employees fill that out for each call, and then that can be utilized in the allocation.
Yeah, that's great. So this has been a great conversation. Allocations are just so interesting. You know, it probably says how geeky I am here. But it's just so interesting, this whole notion of building models, of figuring out how to get all the pieces that you need in order for the model to work well and to add value. And then once you've built your model and you look at the results, you know, basically seeing if there are any surprises in it. And sometimes there will be surprises because you built a good and accurate model that tells you things that you didn't realize before. Sometimes there'll be surprises because your model is off in some way, you know? And so with anything, when you're doing analysis based on models, I think it's also very important to make sure that you have some way of validating it. And by validate, I don't mean get to 100% accuracy, because we know that's not possible in a model, but at least there has to be a gut check, right? That the answers that you're getting actually do make sense in some way. So as you're designing your model, I think it's important to have in your mind some way of testing the model once you've built it. Does that make sense at all?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I always do after I build an allocation model is I will typically look, say I'm building an allocation model for an actual period, say October 2021, I always look at the high level at like total department, total product, net income, right? The net income is not going to change at the top, right? We are not creating costs, and we're not reducing costs as part of this allocation. It's a model, so all we're doing is shifting costs and putting them in different buckets, essentially, right? So the net income, the top level line item, should always be the same. That's kind of a check that I do, kind of a validation check. And then I'll drill in deeper from there and kind of start to do the analysis and see if the bucketing that happened during the allocation process makes sense.
Yeah, and it seems to me that getting back to the other thing we were talking about, which is trying to keep it as simple as possible, like not add complexity unnecessarily. If you can keep it simple, this whole thing is, number one, going to be a lot easier. And number two, going to be easier to explain to other people who perhaps care about the results, right? You know, mm-hmm. The product A guys, you know, may say, hey, you know, I don't think this is a fair number. But then if you can actually show them, well, this is the number of minutes the call center is spending on your product versus the other product, then maybe they'll reluctantly, you know, agree, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, well, Chris, I'm going to wrap it up here, but thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you explaining allocations in insurance and, frankly, I think allocations in general. So thank you very much.
Absolutely, AG. Always good to catch up.
Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Do stay in touch. You can email us at info@quebit.com or check out past episodes and transcripts at qubit.com/podcast. Until next time, take care.